It's time for hour number two of the Bible study. I'm Chuck Rathert. Well, we always have a lot of fun when Pastor Lukomsky comes. That's why I am willing to have the Pastor John Lukomsky English Standard Version Bible imposed on me, because he's such a nice guy when he imposes. But I tell you what, he cleans up his act when Mrs. Lukomsky comes in. Whoa. I mean, he sits up straight and he has his hair combed and everything. It's just amazing. Our Ask the Pastor Bible study. Open phones here at 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. If you'd like to join us with a question or a comment, we say good morning and welcome to our good friend from Faith Lutheran Church in Cherubusco, Indiana, Pastor and Dr. Lane Berglund. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Brother Chuck, and to all who be listening. Good morning to all.
We are thinking that we might hit 70 degrees today, and I thought to myself, well, if they've got that kind of weather over in Indiana, that means that Pastor Berglund will have gotten out on his motorcycle.
Yes, indeed.
And you have.
It hit 51 degrees this morning, so, and even though the rains had come through, hopefully washed away some of the salt, I took out the bagger, the 01
The
Ultra.
Bagger?
Yeah.
That's what I got on the back of my lawnmower.
I have one of those, too, but this one has two wheels and just loves the open highway, the Harley-Davidson, and went down to the district office today for a pastor's conference and rode back on it. I even saw another motorcycle out today. That's how warm it is out here. We got two motorcycles on the road, yep.
They got a Heaven's Angels chapter there in Cherubusco?
They do have a Christian Motorcycle Association
they, really?
Group, but oddly enough, they kind of meet on Sunday mornings, and I'm kind of committed there.
Wow.
So I have not really ever joined any group. Wouldn't mind, I guess, but I tend to have odd times when I can ride. Like this morning, for example, not a lot of guys free on Tuesday morning, but there I am.
Well, are you a sports fan?
Not so much, but I try to follow just because I know a lot of people that I serve are.
Okay.
A lot of people in the congregation are.
Yeah, do you follow baseball at all?
Used to. That would be the one sport I would actually pay to go watch when I lived in St. Louis. I went and saw the St. Louis Baseball Cardinals on quite a number of occasions.
I think you're probably the perfect guy to ask this question because you're not so gaga over Major League Baseball that it clouds your thinking, but you have a familiarity with it, which will allow you to react. Alex Rodriguez, have you heard the news about him?
I have, you know, admitted his steroid use a few years back, I guess.
I would like to know, from a Christian perspective, now this is, you know, Major League Baseball is not a Christian activity. Whatever A-Rod does or doesn't do as it pertains to baseball doesn't necessarily have anything to do with Christianity. But he admitted to Peter Gammons of ESPN that he did, in fact, use performance-enhancing drugs from, at the very least, the years 2001 through 2003. This comes on the heels of having been interviewed by Katie Couric, who asked him point-blank if he had used performance-enhancing drugs, and he told her point-blank no. So there is no doubt that Alex Rodriguez lied to Katie Couric. Now, he tells Peter Gammons that he did use performance-enhancing drugs. He said, I did take a banned substance, and you know, for that I'm very sorry and deeply regretful. Now, there are far-reaching implications here. In the minds of some, he is arguably the best player of his time, and he is a lock for the Hall of Fame. And he is idolized by young baseball players all across America. But what we know today is that he is a liar and a cheater. So what are we supposed to do, Pastor? He's not making a Christian confession to his pastor. That's a different kingdom. He's in the kingdom of Major League Baseball. Are we supposed to just say, okay, that's all right, all those all-star games you played in and MVPs that you got, that might be a little tainted, but that's okay. Are we supposed to do that, or should we come down on him with both feet, or should we just forget about baseball and do something else, or how do you see it?
Well, as one who regularly uses performance-enhancing drugs...
Oh, well, that's good.
I can relate. Well, I drink coffee in the morning. There's some caffeine, and that helps.
Keeps you awake on the motorcycle.
Yeah, it gets me a little more awake on Sunday mornings, but... I appreciate, first of all, his somewhat late arrival at the position of being honest. I think honesty is, as a general rule, a pretty good policy. Although you can understand lying to protect yourself, that's very much human nature.
You can understand that.
Because I've lied a lot over the years, too, And every married guy lies. Of course we lie, Do I look good in this dress? Of course you do, honey. You could wear a burlap sack and you would look dynamite. And by the way, they do. But, it's not that's just self-preservation. You don't want to get killed. The lying business is just a real normal. As a pastor and as a parent of grown children, I get lied to pretty regularly. Human nature will do that in order to protect itself. We think this is the way to go forth, that we can cover up and fib and deceive.
But are you telling me that when you tell your wife looks good in a dress that maybe you're thinking to yourself doesn't look so good?
She's not listening now, is she? I'm going to get into trouble if she is.
Well, if she's on the internet, she might be, but she's probably not. But are you actually going to try to tell me that when you say to your wife, "Oh yes, dear, that dress looks fine on you," and A-Rod tells a public journalist like Katie Couric that he is not using performance-enhancing drugs, that all lies are the same? Are you going to try to tell me that?
We might say that all lies are lies. There is that. Some are less, less impacting than others. There are lies that Satan tells, for example, Adam and Eve. God said, "You're going to die if you eat this. Oh, you won't die." Half a truth, half a lie. The trickiest kind of a lie is that which embodies some truth. And those are lies that kill, and lies that tear apart, and lies that tear down. And, of course, then there are lies that simply protect yourself so you can win things you might not otherwise win. Like, for example, professional, but it's not limited to that, of course, sports. And then there are those what we sometimes call little white lies that we offer to make life a little easier. And then, of course, the other and the greatest kind of lies, a la Mark Twain, statistics. So, the really big lies are those that are offered by statisticians, but we won't go there. I'm sure there are many fine statisticians in the world, too, but people tend to twist them to their own ends. Yeah, deception is kind of an ordinary part of human existence, one of the reasons why the Bible's so refreshing and God is so different. He kind of tells the truth on a regular basis. But, we probably all need to take our stand under the flag of liars, because that's what we do to one degree or another. On a regular basis.
Well, see, now I'm confused. I understand that there is nobody on the face of the earth who can say, "I have been entirely honest all my life." I understand that that is true. At the same time, there are people that I know who I consider to be honest people, and while it's probably true that they haven't been completely honest every minute of every day, they are trustworthy people.
Yeah.
And then I know there are people who are scoundrels. And that they're given to be liberal with the truth, and you know that they can exaggerate or bend a story, and they're not as trustworthy. I make those kind of distinctions. There are probably people who make those distinctions about me. They view me in that one way or the other.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Is that wrong to do that, Pastor?
No, it's just a matter of credibility and integrity. When we grow up, as we go through life, we learn that there are some people that you can't trust, and if you don't learn the distinction, you're going to be broke fast and abused, really, used, abused, and then ignored. You end up in figuring out that there are people in life you can depend upon, and then there are those people that you can't, and it is a matter of self-respect and integrity. And in the case of, say, professional sports, where you have goals or you're competing and you want to achieve something, it's very tempting to cheat and to cut a corner and to take a way that you're not proud of later. And as a hunter, I could perhaps speak to the whole issue of hunting. There are ways that you can put a fine trophy whitetail on your wall. Some of them involving paying a guy who pen raises deer, which you can then go in and shoot. And there are different types of pen-raised animals, but, we're talking about paying somebody a certain fee and going in and shooting it. Or you can go to someone that already has shot one and buy his trophy and stick it on the wall and brag about it. Those are real integrity issues. Would you put up somebody else's deer? Would you put up one that you just paid to walk in and shoot? Is that something that you want to brag about? Well, you know, out of self-respect, no. The things on my walls I've kind of shot in their environment as they had gone about their peaceful business and I intruded. But they're mine, honestly, and I can look at them and take a certain encouragement from them that, no, I'm even if I didn't do any good this year, that's okay. I've done well years before. And I'm sure that that's what the gentleman, Mr. Rodriguez, you spoke of earlier, is trying to wrestle with now, you know, having taken a shortcut, having cheated, taken a path maybe many of his contemporaries and fellow ballplayers did not take. The awards that he's won aren't really quite what they were. You know, if the rules are that we go into this without performance-enhancing drugs, and you achieve your goals that way, there's much to give thanks to God for, and you can feel really good about the things you've done. If on the other hand, we get there by cheating, and there's probably not very many people that haven't cheated at one thing or another in their lives, myself included, then you just can't look at that with any sort of pride or with any sense of accomplishment. And that's a terrible thing you've got to live with all the rest of your life. For forgiveness, we can turn to the Lord, yes. As far as professional sports goes, you know, I'm not the commissioner to make that sort of decision. I wish him all the best for both wisdom as well as compassion. But it's not a good role model when it seems like anything that you have to do to get to the top is an okay thing. That just doesn't look good. In fact, I'm sure it's God's eyes and down through history. Doesn't even look good in your own eyes later on in life.
Let me read just a few paragraphs from this story out of New York from the Associated Press. It says, Alex Rodriguez, the player who would restore integrity to baseball's home run record, okay, we've already hit an important word there, integrity, admitted Monday to using performance-enhancing drugs himself. The All-Star third baseman said in an interview with ESPN that he used steroids with the Texas Rangers for 3 years, from 2001 to 2003, in an attempt to justify his status as the game's highest-paid player after signing a 10-year, $252 million contract. Back then, it was a different culture, Rodriguez said. It was very loose. I was young. I was stupid. I was naive. And I wanted to prove to everyone that, you know, I was worth, you know, and being one of the greatest players of all time. He said he quit after 2003, his first of three AL MVP seasons, because I've proved to myself and to everyone that I don't need any of that. He was traded to the New York Yankees before the 2004 season. At the top of the hour here on the Associated Press Network News, here on our radio station, it was revealed this morning that the Yankees are accepting his contrition, but the Texas Rangers, who don't control him anymore, are not very happy about it. So the people who have him are more forgiving. The people who don't have him are less forgiving. He says, I was stupid. Now, based on all of the things that he has said, and that's pretty, you know, that's pretty amazing in this day and age for somebody to actually take this kind of responsibility.
Kind of a good thing to say, really.
If you're a Christian, if you're a Yankees fan, does your Christianity enter into this evaluation as you think this through in any way, or is this just got nothing to do with the kingdom of the right? If you want to evaluate it, do it over there in the left-hand civil kingdom and be done with it.
It does, I think, touch both kingdoms. That is to say, on the one hand, we appreciate someone who's willing to take responsibility for his deeds, and if there are consequences, to accept them as well. That's just kind of a basic human integrity thing. The Christian element comes in, too, when we talk about forgiveness and how that works. That is to say, inasmuch as Christ has died for all sinners, and that's all of us, Mr. Rodriguez included, inasmuch as we also pray, forgive us our trespasses as we forgive those who trespass against us, which is kind of a personal thing, but would, I think, extend also to something like this. Forgiveness is something we want to always offer. At one point, Peter asked a question in Matthew 18 about forgiveness. How often should I forgive my brother when he sins against me? And, of course, again, it's kind of a personal thing. This isn't that, but related, I think. seven times he asked the question. Four times would have been the rabbinic answer. Someone sins against you four times, forgive them, fifth time, whack them, I guess. But Peter was more generous than that. You know, points for Peter. The other side of it, Jesus said, no, 70 times 7 or 77s. Translate the Greek as either 77 or 77s. It's an exact quote, really, of Lamech's boast in Genesis 4 about how much more important and powerful than God he is, because he's talking about getting even, you know, and if Cain is avenged sevenfold, then Lamech will be avenged 77-fold, and Jesus turns that on its head, and no, you want to be forgiving other people 77. So it's kind of a culture of forgiveness at the foot of the cross, that as Christians, absolution is what we receive, absolution is what we also then pass on, whether it's at home and in family, or of a personal affront, or even something along those lines. Now, with regards to consequences for having done that, I'm not sure what the baseball community has set in place to deal with that sort of thing. I know it's possible in some sports that you lose your awards, and whether that's the case here or not, I don't know.
Do you use the small catechism to teach the faith to adults and children?
Yes, I do. For both adults and children, I use our Luther small catechism.
My small catechism says, the eighth commandment, you shall not give false testimony against your neighbor.
Mm-hmm.
That's a fairly specific command. Did Alex Rodriguez break that commandment?
Technically, yeah. The original application is in court under oath, but it is by extension something that we realize God has an interest in us being as honest in our daily speech as we are under oath in court. And, yeah, he lied to Katie Couric, according to the story that you shared with me. I didn't see it personally, but by George, that was wrong.
The explanation... Luther's explanation to the Eighth Commandment. He says, we should fear and love God so that we do not tell lies about our neighbor, betray him, slander him, or hurt his reputation. Now, Alex Rodriguez didn't lie about anybody except himself, and he is not his own neighbor, I don't think. So, can I use that argument to say that he did not break the Eighth Commandment? This is not an example of breaking the Eighth Commandment.
By its strict application to lying under oath in court, it comes close when being interviewed on TV, but you'd have to say the oath part wasn't there. However, it's just like several of the other commandments upon which Jesus comments in Matthew 5, 6, and 7, where thou shalt not murder also includes calling someone names. There's a kind of broader application to the principle that's embedded in the legislation. And that's something that you'll see unfolded in various parts of the other laws in the Old Testament as well. Ten Commandments rather give us a really good snapshot summary of the whole package. But as far as being honest about not only each other, about ourselves, that's, you know, kind of built into that. In the same way that someone who gets angry with another person breaks the Fifth Commandment, so someone who lies would be breaking the Eighth Commandment because it's about truth-telling.
So... it says here in the opening paragraph of this AP story, Alex Rodriguez, the player who would restore integrity to baseball's home run record, admitted Monday to using performance-enhancing drugs himself. That paragraph is pregnant with implications. First of all, without even identifying Barry Bonds, it has suggested that Barry Bonds' home run records do not have integrity. Because even though he hasn't admitted anything, as A-Rod has, I guess just about everybody and his brother believes that Bond's home run records are tainted by his use of performance-enhancing drugs. The one player in existence who would appear to have the possibility to eclipse Bond's career home run record would be A-Rod. But I guess he can't do that now either. Because of 2001, 2002, and 2003. So if he were to do it, it's not going to count. Now, we're just talking about Major League Baseball here, and we've got an economy that's in terrible shape, and we've got people who are losing their jobs, and maybe this isn't important, but he lied, and he cheated.
And don't you think that's really, I'm glad you made mention of the subject, because don't you think that's kind of a larger issue across the board? It happened in baseball. We saw it again recently as Illinois' governor was impeached, who had promised to come in and clean up government, but apparently had had some of the same issues that we're talking about professional sports, that we find kind of a common occurrence in our world, this sort of lack of integrity, lack of honesty, a willingness to cheat or to lie if it means getting ahead, becoming famous and wealthy, because we think that's really where it's all at, and ultimately that's not where it's at. It's really kind of funny how human beings deceive themselves to thinking that becoming famous and becoming wealthy will bring with them fulfillment, happiness, and all the good things of life, when in fact it doesn't. To compare it to a trip, you think, well, how do I get from here to, say, like Denver most quickly? Well, you can fly, or you can drive, or you can get on the motorcycle. You could even, I suppose, walk or take a bicycle. Each one of those will bring with it its own series of experiences. The fastest way, the shortest way, is the airplane, but you don't have much of a trip. You know, you had to take your shoes off to get on the airplane. You spent a little while cooped up in a box 25,000 feet in the air, then you landed. In the meantime, you might have been able to look down at the clouds or up at the sun and had kind of a pleasant moment there, but you know, you miss out on the important stuff, the good stuff down below, the trees, the air, the wind, sometimes the snow, the rain, the hail. And if you want to involve yourself in all that, you choose another method, say motorcycling, for example. And it's a way different experience. The trip itself becomes kind of the purpose of the whole vacation. The destination's still good, but the trip has changed remarkably. And I think this for people, you know, it's good to have a value system that reflects God's values as in Scripture, because those are the ones that really satisfy, not money and fame.
Now,
but then that's how you get there is the big deal, too.
You're a person who, by your own admission, is not a big Major League Baseball fan. You're familiar with the game, the sport. But there are a lot of people, some of them listening to us right now, particularly here in St. Louis, which is a baseball-crazy kind of a town, for whom their affection for baseball, Major League Baseball, is very strong.
Certainly.
And they are downcast now because the whole game has been tainted here. And they don't know whether to be angry or disappointed, or they don't know what to do with it. Do you have any suggestions?
Yeah, I had been something like, say, of a fan many years ago, and in the first strike that the players put on kind of...
Dampened?
Yeah, dampened my enthusiasm for the game. Not that I don't think they should share in the profits. You know, if there's huge dollars coming in, they should get an appropriate share of it, and more for them. Good luck to them. The downside is, golly, you know, it sort of dampened my enthusiasm for the game, and I became distanced from it. In a world, let's see if I can say this without sounding silly, we need something to fill the void in our hearts and in our lives. And I think sometimes sports can become a substitute for a better thing to put in there, like God. Whether it's money, fame, wealth, sports, sometimes these things are a little more important than they should be to us. Maybe it's good to get disillusioned sometimes, take a step back and say, well, what really is important to me?
Interesting perspective. All right. Let's take our bottom of the hour break. You're listening to the Bible Study. Pastor Lane Berglund is with us from Faith Lutheran Church in Churubusco, Indiana. We'll resume on the other side of this short break.
1924, a year of firsts. It was the year Gershwin's Rhapsody in Blue played for the very first time. IBM was founded, airmail service began, and Johnny Weissmuller won his first gold medals at the Paris Summer Olympics. It was also the first time AM 850 KFUO broadcast the gospel on radio. And we've never stopped. Do you think that's significant? Then join us Sunday, March 29th, for an elegant celebration of Thanksgiving at the Westboro Country Club. There will be chamber music, fine dining, and an address from acclaimed author and historian Dr. Paul Meyer, son of KFUO founder Walter Meyer. Mingle with members of the AM 850 KFUO staff and have an enjoyable evening. Save the date, Sunday, March 29th, and make your reservation today. Call Joni at 314-505-7874. 314-505-7874. Or call the switchboard and ask for Joni.
Learn more about a plant that can help fend off everything from indigestion to Alzheimer's next on today's Creation Moments. And now, here's our Creation Moments host, Ian Taylor.
Many ancient peoples, including the nation of Israel, made various ointments from spices. In India, they have been using a spice called turmeric for medicinal purposes for 3,000 years. Turmeric is made from the roots of a broad-leafed plant that grows well in the warm, moist climate of southern Asia. Ancient healers in India used turmeric to treat skin wounds, jaundice, indigestion, and several other ailments. Turmeric is also found in most curry dishes. Modern medical science has now begun to study the spice. Preliminary research shows that turmeric lowers total blood cholesterol by 11% and increases good cholesterol by 29%. But the most hopeful and dramatic medical use of the spice may be in treating, even reversing, Alzheimer's disease. The active ingredient in the spice is curcumin. In lab tests, curcumin has been shown to aid the body in ridding itself of the amyloid beta plaques that result in Alzheimer's. These results are supported by a population study done in India. A study of people over 65 in that country who regularly included turmeric in their diet showed an incidence of Alzheimer's that was only a quarter of what it is in the West. In his foreknowledge, God knew that man would sin and bring death and disease upon himself. In his mercy, he stocked the creation with natural medicines to help us.
For more information, visit us online at creationmoments.com. You'll find both written and audio transcripts, creation-focused articles and Bible studies, and many other resources, all at creationmoments.com.
The Christ-centered programs you hear every day on AM 850 KFUO are made possible by the generous giving of friends like Calvin and Priscilla Lindwedel of Hillsboro, Missouri, Vern and Marty Lindfeld of O'Fallon, Illinois, Sue Mays of St. Louis, Missouri, and Stephen and Sheila McMichael of Florissant, Missouri. Your faithful support for AM 850 KFUO ensures the future of our radio ministry.
When it's so cold outside that eating ice cream seems like a good way to warm up, you're ready for some relief from those midwinter blues. Well, here's just the prescription for what ails you. Stroll through the Victorian charm of Henry's Garden, where you'll be embraced in the warmth of the colors and fragrances of over 8,000 orchids, arrayed in a courtyard setting straight out of yesteryear. You can forget about winter daily at the Missouri Botanical Garden's 91st Annual Orchid Show from 9 to 5 through March 15th. For more information, contact mobot.org.
Our guest here on the Bible study is Pastor Lane Berglund, pastor at Faith Lutheran Church in Churubusco, Indiana. If you have a comment on the situation with A-Rod, you're welcome to call us. Or if you want to move on to another subject, introduce something else, you can do that. I am, in fact, going to move on to a poll that was published by the magazine Christianity Today. Do you ever read that magazine, Pastor?
Yeah, I used to in the past when I read. I kind of gave up reading about 10 years ago, and I've been very happy with pictures since then.
The President of the United States, President Obama, made a few ripples, I believe, back even during the campaign when he suggested that he would retain President Bush's Office of Faith-Based Initiatives. The secular crowd that tends to take a dim view of faith or Christianity or religion didn't seem to resonate with that very well, but he has kept that promise, and now the Office of Faith-Based Initiatives apparently is going to focus on four main issues. Now, before we talk about what those issues are, do you have an opinion about the federal government having an Office of Faith-Based Initiatives?
I will share my nervousness about any time that religion and government kind of get together. Inevitably, it seems like government sort of takes over and redefines religion as another form of governmental control. I think back to the time of the Roman emperors when, in order to solidify their rule and reign, They adopted the Eastern practice of claiming to be a divinity and requiring the citizens not only to obey them, but to worship them and pray to them. And that was obviously not something either the faithful Jewish people were going to do nor the Christians. And it's kind of an extreme example, but I also just always get nervous whenever the government gets too close to religion. I appreciate those that would keep the two separated. I think that's good for religion and no doubt also healthy for government. But yeah, it's like government and health care. Kind of, you know, get nervous about that combination. Doesn't look like it works out too well in the real world.
All right, let's put our Christianity Today conversation on hold here for a second and bring on Jan. She wants to talk about A-Rod. Hi, Jan. You're on the Bible study.
Hi, Chuck.
Good morning.
Hi, Pastor.
Hi.
I was remembering, I think it was this past Sunday's epistle lesson. Was it 1 Corinthians 9?
Mm-hmm. You're very good, yes.
Where Paul says that every athlete exercises self-control in all things. They do it to receive a perishable wreath, but we an imperishable. And, but I discipline my body and keep it under control, and lest after preaching to others, I myself should be disqualified. And I thought that was interestingly applicable to this situation.
Is there an application for A-Rod in that text, Pastor?
Well, yes. In fact, a reminder
you,
to all of us, too, and thank you, yes. The ancient world held up athletes much as we do. We're very like them in this, in our idolizing of athletics and of successful athletes. They, like modern athletes, kind of ruled the roost. That's what every young man wanted to be. They didn't have women athletes back in the Greco-Roman era. It was just a guy thing, really. But, yeah, they had fame, they had fortune, they had girlfriends, they had the adulation of the masses. Everybody cheered when they saw him. I mean, they had true celebrity status, as it were. So when Paul touches that particular nerve for them and for us, it reminds us of the fact that life, if we're going to accomplish something, really requires some self-discipline and sacrifice, and that if you want to streamline your life towards one goal, that involves getting rid of everything that does not advance you towards that one goal. It's kind of that single-minded mission purpose sort of emphasis that so defined Paul. You know, what are you willing to give up in order to get the gospel to other people? And we see Paul giving up literally everything else in his life with that single purpose in mind to bring salvation to people. So, yeah, using an athletic metaphor then or today, and he does so also in Timothy, you know, is understandable. It helps communicate, and it reminds us that we're not much different than the people that have gone before us.
All right, on the Faith-Based Initiative Office, four issues apparently have been identified to be subjects of focus in the new Obama Faith-Based Office. And those four issues are reducing poverty, reducing abortions, encouraging responsible fatherhood, and fostering worldwide interfaith dialogue. Now, do those goals sound consistent with faith-based initiatives to you?
Indeed, much of what you just mentioned as four targets are worth pursuing, truly. You know, the whole business about trying to reduce or eliminate poverty. We're always going to have poverty, but, gee, that just means it's a target-rich environment. And there are people that can use a helping hand, not only in material things, but in learning how to live and learning how to manage resources and so forth. I'm a little surprised by the reducing abortions thing, because I always thought that was kind of one of the issues in the campaign, was the whole, you know, pro-abortion or pro-choice versus the pro-life or anti-abortion camps. And then seems strange to see that he would be in favor of a faith-based initiative to reduce abortions. The rest of that, on the other hand, the whole dialogue of interfaith, that's kind of an interesting subject area, if you will. If by dialogue we're talking about finding ways to cooperate on stuff that we can do together and pooling resources for that, seems like only common sense to go that route. If by dialogue he means finding a way to come together in doctrine, that, and you know, how many faiths are we talking about here within the Christian community? I would be surprised if he was thinking of only that. I think he would, you know, imagine something broader that would include all the various religions, not just Christianity, in this dialogue. Certainly understanding one another and getting right what each other teaches, not only within the Christian community but outside the Christian community, is very helpful and a good thing. It's such a disservice to anybody's faith to characterize or have only a straw man version of that person's faith. But, you know, like, for example, if I were to talk to folks about what a Catholic might believe, Roman Catholic, it's a good thing to ask a Roman Catholic, what do you believe? And let them give the presentation as best they can. So, understanding and cooperation on things we can, but the idea that we can, you know, all sort of patch over our differences and pretend we have more in common than that, the cross, Christ Jesus, in fact, himself, has always been a stumbling block, what's sometimes been called the scandal of particularity. That is, a claim that there is only one path to the one true God, and that's through faith in Jesus Christ. That's always been a problem for interfaith relationships, and it will always be one.
Well, the federal government has always been a little too massive for me to understand completely. But it was my impression that under the Bush administration, the Office of Faith-Based Initiatives was established in order to provide funding to private agencies, whether secular or religious, that did good work in neighborhoods. So if there was a Catholic hospital somewhere that was doing great work in a neighborhood where otherwise there wouldn't be attention to health care, then it could be that they would be in line for some government funding. Things like that, maybe reading programs or adoption centers.
Mm-hmm.
But now this seems to have been expanded a little bit in these four focuses. And I wonder if you see a slippery slope here, because it may be that we're not just too many steps away from having an initiative of tolerance and inclusion, which might lead to the federal government checking up on what Pastor Berglund is preaching over there at Faith Lutheran Church, and whether or not his preaching is tolerant and inclusive.
Politically correct, yeah. Yeah, the two prongs, if you will. One is the strings that come attached to any government funding. One of the elements in debate as to whether the people that send their kids to a private school or a parochial school should get some sort of credit for that off their taxes because they're not utilizing the public school system, and that's sort of a separate issue, or whether the government should issue vouchers to help pay for public school, you know, coming out of tax funds. Always had at least the need to talk about what strings would be attached to that. As government money, generally, I think it's fair to say, doesn't come without a lot of requirements, including the opportunity to check up on you, see what you're doing with it. The other side of it, you know, when you talk about the expansion of political correctness and how far do you carry that, you know, we have an amendment to the Constitution that guarantees religious belief freedom, that we should be able to believe what we want, but there are obvious limits to that, just as with free speech and all the other guaranteed stuff. At what point, then, do you judge someone having crossed the boundary? In our current age, the way things are right now, if I was to stand up in the pulpit and read certain sections of the Bible publicly, say over the airwaves, would that be a crime? And I think in some places where hate crimes are somewhat broadly defined, yeah, reading the Bible over the airwaves would be a hate crime, and you'd go to jail for it, because the Bible tends to tell us plainly what sin looks like and what God disapproves of. So let's say I'm doing something that God disapproves of, and you read a portion of the Bible where God says that, because God's really good about being honest on these things. He wants us to have a real clear picture of how deep the trouble is that we are in, so that we appreciate the Savior, which he sent for all of us. You read that passage over the airways, it's politically incorrect. I'm involved in something that I don't like to hear that I'm doing wrong. Therefore, I file a a complaint, the government investigates, you know, and finds out there is some substance to the charge of being politically incorrect, and you go to jail. Is that an ultimate possibility down this slippery slope? Probably.
You're fading away on me there a little bit, guys.
I thought I was, too. I was wondering, was just my ears going or my mind was going, too?
But you're back. Okay, here's another issue. Let's just pretend for a moment that you are a pastor down in Texas, okay? This is a story that has a headline that says, Adultery Service Targets Married Texans. And the story says a dating service is targeting its advertising at married people, encouraging them to commit adultery. The television commercials are from the Ashley Madison Agency. According to Bill Johnson of the American Decency Association, the commercials are, quote, basically giving married people a place to find attachment with others who are available, whether married or unmarried, unquote. Television is not the group's only advertising venue. One of Ashley Madison's magazine ads invites other websites to establish an affiliate program. That ad depicts a stone tablet bearing one of the Ten Commandments, except the words are modified to read, Thou shalt make money from adultery.
My wife won't let me do that, I'm pretty sure. She'd tell me no.
Johnson examined the operation's website as well. They have as one of their logo statements, Life is short, have an affair. This company basically states on their webpage, have an affair, guaranteed. CEO Neil Biderman is quoted as saying that their campaign is designed currently to encourage married women to have an affair. One commercial was rejected by the Super Bowl and NBC, but it aired on Texas television stations during the game. According to Johnson, there is more. They proudly announced that they have been able to run their ads successfully on CNN, ESPN, Fox News, and MSNBC, he reports. Ashley Madison claims more than 3.2 million subscribers and proudly boasts that in Texas alone, 200,000 people have signed up with the company's infidelity service in the past 2 years. Johnson suggests people offended by the commercials contact their local station or cable source.
You know, I thought people were doing perfectly well on that score by themselves without the help given by an organization.
Well, you know, if you can make a little money offering some assistance, I guess.
Yeah, what are these guys can't find the local bar? I mean, how much help do they need? You know,
so
this is you got to be pretty lame. You have to pay for, I mean, just personal reaction. Sorry about that. It's just like, wow, what kind of loser do you have to be to have to hire somebody to help you get an affair going? Okay, having gone over that part, let's get back to the serious stuff.
Yeah, well, if you were a pastor down in this place where this television commercial ran, and maybe you had seen it, maybe you and your kids sitting there watching the Super Bowl, and you see this commercial, are you motivated to do something?
Oh, but you know, change the channel comes to mind. They just
well, you want to watch the Super Bowl, don't you?
Well, again, I wanted to watch the commercials, but I recorded it and watched the commercials. But I missed the good one about the monkey on the couch. But that's another story. I did watch the commercials though. The is that whole professional sports thing having sort of become a little bit jaded, my perspective. But yeah, I'll give the man points for originality. I wouldn't have thought of that. The other side is I can't really imagine this is going to go real well for the people that sign up ultimately. Most people take it amiss when their spouse cheats on them, even if they do use a service to do so. And I can only say that because, you know, the number of people that come to me for marriage counseling are almost always coming as a result of infidelity issues. It's not like she burns the bread or, you know, he forgets to take the trash out. What can I do? It's more like the spouse is cheating. What can I do? So, gee, this is a really popular sport already. Don't need extra help on it, I would have thought.
Well, and I appreciate your levity, but if there are 200,000 people that have already signed up for this, then that's probably no small amount of families and children that are going to be hurt.
Yeah, in the real world.
It's going to be devastating, it seems to me.
Routinely, yeah, and it's generally the kids that will pay the highest price it is in most dysfunctional family situations. The I would have thought, too, that whoever is generating this, the CEO, the guy that started, that may not understand just what kind of damage this does to not only people but a society.
He's not worried about damage. He's trying to make money.
Yeah, there's got to be a line somewhere where making money off that sort of thing is just wrong. And I know in this world, with, you know, categories of right and wrong are very fluid and flexible. And I routinely hear that there's no such thing as an absolute right and wrong. But since God is God and he is an absolute, he gets to say what's right and wrong. And from that Christian perspective, or that biblical perspective, I should say, see, yeah, the guy should be ashamed of himself for doing that.
Well, you know, if you can set up a business, as so many have, where women can take their unborn babies to be carved up into pieces.
Yeah, if and legal
can,
it is.
And if you can do that, and it doesn't prompt much of a reaction from what we would otherwise call the believing people of God, then I don't think anybody's going to be picketing the adultery service down there in Texas. And there seems to me to be something wrong with that.
Yeah, it is having lost, it's been described as having lost the way, or the moral compass no longer works, not sure what direction is north, south, east, and west. Once it all becomes okay, everything's okay. You know, whether it's the murder of babies in the womb, or whether it's having an affair, I just am amazed that there'd be somebody out there doing it, you know, sort of professionally. It's because, golly, we were so good at it already. Do we need professional help on this level? But I suppose money is money, and that's the meaning of it. And in a society, what was Robert Bork's book, Slouching Towards Gomorrah?
Yeah.
Yeah. I wonder sometimes, and it bothers me, and it's not that other peoples over the history of the world haven't also found themselves sunk in the morass of immorality, which we're in, and then liking it, you know, but it's good if we can recognize that that's where we're at and say, you know, I just really enjoy the wrong, rather than saying wrong is right. I'm talking too much abstractly. The society that loses its way morally will eventually be destroyed, I think. That's kind of lesson history tells us.
Well, that would be an outcome that I think we'd all like to try to avoid, shouldn't we?
I would vote to avoid it if we could, but on the other hand, it's, you know, some of the folks outside of our own society, and I'm thinking of some of the immigrants who come over for a while. They don't intend to stay here, but they're here for a while, and then they eventually go back home. So often have a critical comment to make about American, because of the morality of it, you know, that they come from a society where there are standards and rules, and they may be different from what our own tradition is, but there are standards and rules that they follow. And they come to us, and they look at us, and it does look like just a huge morass of filth. And I can certainly understand how they could see it that way. Sometimes, and this is good for churches too, Christians as well, is to listen to what your critics have to say and ask if there isn't some basis in their comments that's true and right, and thus a need to do reform and to change things. And I would think that, you know, we've gotten to a point where it's really tough to hear any criticism for anybody else because we just are not interested. We've chosen a hedonistic path. It's probably going to lead to self-destruction. I wish it wouldn't. Be nice if we get things turned around again, but sometimes it feels like that's the direction we're headed.
When I read the paragraph on here that says that the ad, that the magazine ad that these people put out, depicts a stone tablet bearing one of the Ten Commandments.
Yeah, I thought that was way over the top there.
Yeah, well, you kind of chuckled when I read that, and
yeah.
I took that to mean that you viewed that to be ridiculous.
Well, yeah,
but
pretty darn silly.
Why do I get the feeling that if God is capable of white-hot anger, that things like that might be pushing him in that direction?
Yeah, I'm thinking...
Is that a biblical way to view it?
Yeah, Sodom, Gomorrah, Admah, Zeboim, Zoar, things didn't go well.
But we haven't had, you know, we haven't had fire from heaven, brimstone raining out of heaven on Sodom and Gomorrah for a long time. It appears
been a while.
It appears that God has set that option aside.
Hasn't employed it lately, but I don't think he's quite forgotten how to do it.
So what do you think God, does God make note of a business and an organization who takes one of his precious Ten Commandments and uses it in a kind of a mocking fashion to sell adultery service?
Yeah, I put muddy marbles or chalk on that one. I think he gives us his word because it's a direction and help and life, and then we do things like that with it to make money on it. But, you know, eventually, you know, like one of the things that God tells in Deuteronomy to Moses and to Joshua and to the people, you know, and it's based in Deuteronomy 18 is where I'm thinking, is saying, don't be sacrificing your sons and daughters to the fires like they do over there in Canaan. This is just before Joshua leads the people to take over Canaan. He says, don't give you kids for that reason, and also don't be consulting the dead, checking with spiritists, looking at oracles, figuring out omens. Don't be doing that, because I'll send you a prophet, and you can tell the prophet is from me, because what he says will come true, and he will preach in my name. So, okay, follow the word of the Lord, not the cultures around you, because he says, because they're doing that stuff, they're sacrificing their children, and they're looking to something else for their highest good, I'm going to give their land over to you. Their sin has filled up. Their sin has reached the top of the cup. Their time for stopping what they're doing and getting right with me has passed, and now they're going to get whacked. And that's why I'm giving their land to you. There's a lesson there. You know, God was really patient with the Canaanites for a long, long time, century and century and century. And eventually they used up their window of opportunity, and then it was time to get conquered. And I suspect that's kind of more like what we're going to look at here. We're blessed with an awful lot of freedoms, and boy, that's a wonderful thing to have. And we're also a country in which many people live that know Jesus Christ as their Savior and continue to share that love and that message of hope and life, that he died and rose for all sinners, of which we are included. However, as things change, and we are promised recently that change will occur, so as things continue to change, ultimately I fear that we will run out of time too, that our window of opportunity to repent and return to the Lord will evaporate and well, then to be conquered.
If they start an adultery service out there in Churubusco, Indiana, can you let us know how that goes? Maybe you can firsthand.
Yeah, well, you know,
fight the devil there.
I've always been really grateful because I'm kind of old, fat, and broke. So none of these beautiful ladies of the world have thrown themselves at me. I admire the self-restraint of all the women I've known because they've all managed to check their impulse to proposition me. I'm sure my wife married me only because she realized that was the neediest case she ever found. And that she loved a big project. But we wish you God's grace, Brother
Enjoy
Chuck,
the conversation.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
Pastor Lane Berglund here on our Bible study program, Ask the Pastor, as we wrestle with some of the issues of the day here on our program. Tomorrow, Pastor John Schmidtke is in for chapters 15 and 16 of Judges. And Pastor David Marth will be with us on the telephone for Ask the Pastor.
What is needed for the Bible study to continue? Our address is 85 Founders Lane, St. Louis, Missouri, 63105. You can contact us on the internet at kfuo.org. For a free copy of the Bible study, please visit the audio archive section of our homepage. That's kfuo.org. The Bible study is a broadcast service of Worldwide KFUO.